or not. Good evening. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Please stand for a salute to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Ms. Kudak, would you do roll call, please?
Director Sasania.
Here.
Director Tornatsky.
Here.
Director Womack.
Present.
Vice President Ohilski.
Present.
President Milledge.
Here.
Thank you.
Before we start the procedure for this meeting, I want to make a note that the pizza, which is in the back, has been provided by Hanley and Fleshman. And the other refreshments are by Grace Environmental. And now I'm going to turn the meeting over to Vice President Ohilski.
Thank you.
And
okay, so this is a meeting to discuss the well selection for Program C in our basin management plan. So I'm the chairman of the Basin Management Committee. A lot of you people have been to our Basin Management Committee meetings. So the CSD, just to give you a little background information, the CSD is the party that's responsible for drilling this well under the program that was litigated before the courts. So this is why it's our special meeting rather than the Basin Management Committee, because we're the party that's responsible for it. So Rob Miller, who's the engineer with Wallace Group, who's the district engineer, he's going to give the presentation. What we'd like to do is we're going to have a lot of informal discussion tonight, so we're not going to have a three-minute time limit or any of that things, but we are being broadcast, so we will need people that want to speak come up to the podium rather than speak from the audience, because nobody will be able to hear you then. So what we'll do is we'll have Rob run through the presentation that he has prepared, and then if you have any questions or you want to have discussions, if you could step up to the podium, then we'll proceed forward from that point. And as, like I said, unlike our normal meetings where there's a three-minute limit, we'll have some reasonable limits on time, so you can't speak for hours, but we're not going to cut you back off after 3 minutes. And then under the normal procedure under the Brown Act, there's not a question and answer period when you're up at the podium. The questions are all answered at the end, but we'll do those as the questions are asked. So it will be more of an interactive type procedure, I guess is the best way to put it. And Rob and I are sitting together because we have the most background in this, so we'll be able to kick each other and make sure you get the proper information. That's why I'm sitting over here instead of up where I was over there. So Rob has a PowerPoint information that he's going to start with. It's going to give you a lot of background information. And then once that's over, if you have any questions regarding the presentation or you want to have some discussion, we'll move forward with that. So does anybody have any questions before we start? Okay. Rob?
Thank you, Marshall. So I thought it would be helpful for me just to know the background in the room. And I won't ask you to do this a lot, but how many of you were able to attend in June? We had a Basin Management Committee meeting where there was a lot of discussion of our program C well. Did a lot of you attend that? But not all of you. So forgive me if I'm a little repetitive, because a lot of people haven't heard the same information. And I'm going to run not only back through that presentation, but there's some additional information that our groundwater hydrologist has put together that we're going to present tonight. And what I'd like to do also, if folks are seeing some of the slides here and thinking, well, I'd really like to have those, is we'll arrange to get these to the district's office and get these posted on the web, as well as some of the technical studies that I'll refer to. So you can pull those down, review them, and you know, come to your own conclusions. So, yeah, and I'll be available by email, and even in small groups. Some of you I've met with in small groups. Just you know, we're trying to get a sense for where folks are at on the whole topic. It's a very important community topic. So, if there are small groups of folks who want to have a more in-depth discussion, I'm willing to do that. Excuse me. So tonight it'll primarily be a technical discussion. Hopefully we'll all be on the same base information by the end of the meeting. There's a lot of, I'd say, policy level decisions that are in front of us. Those definitely won't get made tonight and won't get made for some time because we have to follow a process to come to those decisions. So we'll be talking about what we call Program C. And I don't know how many of you are familiar with what we call the Los Osos Basin Plan. It's about a 350-page document, very difficult read, but it provides a background of water issues in this community that stretches back decades and forecasts where we need to go to balance our basin against its current biggest threat, which is seawater intrusion. And most of you have probably heard that before. And that Basin Management Plan has a set of programs, and we gave them letters, A, B, C, and D, and there's others. And they contemplated different types of infrastructure to build to help balance the basin. So Program C was one of those four programs, and that's what we're focused on today. There's also a program called Program B, as in boy, that we're not currently pursuing. And that program focuses on shallow wells in the urban core of the community here in the Baywood area. So if you had questions about that, we could certainly try to answer them tonight, though I'm not going to be talking about Program B in detail. So let's launch into what we're calling our well site selection process looking forward. First, just to emphasize that no final site has been selected or even recommended to the board. We're going to talk about four sites, but those are not the only sites. I wouldn't be surprised if someone comes up tonight and said, boy, why didn't you consider, and they'll have their own site. And I think everything's on the table at this point. And if there are locations that, you know, as a community we feel are the best and that work technically, then certainly those would be considered. So don't be surprised if in the future another site comes up and gets considered. But for tonight, there's four sites that we're going to be talking about. The next phase of this process is called environmental review, and that's where we have to look at all the impacts associated with this well. And that environmental review will probably have multiple alternatives, not just one. And then you'll have notice, and you'll be aware of what's going on throughout that process. And then after that's all done, then staff would recommend a final site, and we actually would begin to look to close property purchase agreements and those sorts of things, and then go through the coastal development process with the Coastal Commission. So when I identify a site on the screen, it does not mean that there's a willing seller. And if you've never done this before, there's nothing worse than to have the actual owner of the property say, "You never talked to me about buying my property." But so I'm not saying that any of these sites are necessarily willing sellers. Just want to make that clear. And again, other sites may be identified. And there may be other factors. And one of the things I would hope to hear tonight is, you know, I've focused in on what I think were the important factors. But if you think, boy, he's really missing it, he didn't consider, you know, X, Y, then I think that'd be good feedback. If you don't feel comfortable, you know, coming up to the podium, again, email or other written communication would be fine if there are things you really feel like at this early stage we're not really talking about and should be talking about. So here's a map. And these are the four sites that we're considering for a what we're calling a Program C well. And this would be it's kind of a standard municipal well. We look to produce somewhere between 100 and 200 acre feet per year from the well. And just so you have a context, an average home might use as little as a quarter of an acre foot up to 1 acre foot, depending on the size of the lot. But here are the four sites that are being considered, and I'll sort of zoom in on each one of these. Site A is adjacent to Los Osos Middle School, near the play fields there. Site B is a private piece of property off of Sage Avenue. Site C is off of Andre Avenue on a 1 acre lot. And Site D is on the far south side of Sunny Oaks Mobile Home Park. I'd call that a kind of a representative site. There's an adjacent park as well that I suppose could be considered, but that's Site D. And if I need to flash these up while you're speaking so you use the same terms, feel free to let me know when you come to the mic, and I can throw up a display for you. So again, zooming in more specifically on these sites, Site A is right near the track there at the Los Osos Middle School, and presumably would either be on school property or in county right-of-way. And then Site B is a private piece of property on Sage Avenue, there on the corner of the property. Site C at an existing developed residential property, 1 acre property on Andre Avenue. And then Site D, a vacant area near the back of the Sunny Oaks Mobile Home Park. And I believe if you're from Sunny Oaks today, we think we sent postcards to all the residents of Sunny Oaks as well. So forgive me if I use some technical jargon, and feel free to call me on it. It is there's so much history on this, it's easy to do that, but and there's a lot of letters to this, so I want to try to break it down. So this is a picture of our groundwater aquifer. And if you look at the yellow little half circle called alluvium, that depicts Los Osos Creek. And this is a section through the ground where the ocean would be out to the left, and Los Osos Creek would be that yellow sliver to the right. And this shows that our groundwater basin has different aquifer layers in it. And these are very important to understand when we look at balancing our groundwater basin. I'll just describe those briefly. So Zone C, the top blue zone, we sometimes call it Zone C. We sometimes call it the upper aquifer. And that's a relatively shallow zone, depending on where you are. It might be a couple hundred feet deep at the deepest. And in terms of permeable layers. And that particular zone is the same zone that a lot of our septic tanks have discharged to over the years. And it has a lot of nitrate in it in different areas. And so it can be challenging to produce from. So that's one of the reasons why we don't have a lot of wells in that zone, and why it can be expensive to produce from. But it's not impossible. It's just you have to add treatment in many cases. So that's also the zone that many of the private domestic lot owners, they often pump from that Zone C. So when we say, oh, you're an upper aquifer well, we mean you're tapped inside that zone. So below that, there's a clay, and that clay separates that zone from the zones below. And the zones below together, zones D and E, we call those the lower aquifer. So we say zone DE, we say lower aquifer, we use those sort of interchangeably. And so the nature of the interaction between the upper aquifer and the lower aquifer, you know, is fairly complicated. We do know the chemistry is different in those two aquifers. The water levels are different, so they are distinct, but there can be some pumping interference between them, but it's usually very small compared to if you're tapped right in the same zone. So that's I think a helpful picture. There also are some very shallow water zones, what we're calling perched zones, and you can hardly see them, zones A and B. So if you have a well that's very shallow, 50, 60 feet, you might be sitting atop what we call a perch zone, which is a localized area, very shallow groundwater. So I'm going to to provide a few technical cross-sections, and some of this might be not of particular interest, but for those of you who are wanting to dive into some of the technical detail, we had our groundwater expert look at these four well sites and plot them on a map so we could look at the ground in a section view and see what they look like. And here is that view. And just to remind you, Site A, Los Osos Middle School, Site B, Sage Avenue, Site C, Andre Avenue, and Site D, Sunny Oaks Mobile Home Park. And so the vertical lines represent where the wells might go and how they interact with these different zones. So you can see that at all four locations, we'd be able to tap into what we call the lower aquifer, zones D and E. And not all of them have the same thickness of aquifer that we could tap. Some are thicker than others, but all of them, we believe, would get into that lower aquifer. We're often asked, this new municipal well, are you looking to just pump from the lower aquifer, or are you looking to pump also from the upper aquifer? And I would say in sites A, B, and C, we are only looking to pump from the lower aquifer. In site D, there might be enough room to also pump a little bit from zone C, the upper aquifer. So, again, forgive me if that's not clear. There's a lot of good documentation if you're interested in some follow-up reading. So now I'd like to walk through some of the criteria that are at least important to the district, and pause for a water break here. Thank you. So I'm going to go through a set of, I guess we could call them criteria, factors that are important to selection, so at least you can know what the thought process is. And we're not weighting these because all of them are important. You know, you might have a place where there's great production, but if you can't get a permit for the well, it's irrelevant. So try to put these together, and we think these are a good criteria to discuss up front. In environmental review, there'll be a lot more detail than this. So the Los Osos Middle School site, we'd say the ability to produce water from that site is one of the key concerns. It's a disadvantage of the site because the aquifer, as you can see up here under Site A, it's quite a bit thinner than the other wells. That doesn't mean it can't be done. It just means one of the initial concerns is, can we get enough production from this well to actually make it worth building the well? Because municipal wells are costly. And so we'd call that a disadvantage. Perhaps we could get 100 acre feet, maybe not quite that. With the Sage well, we have a similar concern that it doesn't tap a whole lot of the lower aquifer, and it might be a good site, but it might require more testing to confirm that. And when I use words like it may be or we're not sure, a lot of that means we just have to do more field exploration to be sure. So some of these unknowns that I'm talking about can be resolved through drilling, testing, that sort of thing. But all that comes with a significant price tag for the district. And so we think it's prudent to get this all out in concept now. So if there's anything that we need to do in terms of testing, we get a program in place that folks can agree to before we go out and test.
Can you explain something? What does AFI stand for?
Oh, thank you for that. And if I, AFY, sorry about that. Acre feet per year. And I'm going to try, and someone can throw something at me if I don't do this. If I see another acronym up there, I'm going to try to define it and not just move on. Thank you for that. So we mean acre foot per year. And again, 100 acre foot per year would serve maybe 300 homes, 400 homes, somewhere in that neighborhood. So just so you get a sense of scale. Some of the current wells in the community produce a lot more than that. They can do 300 or 400 acre feet per year. But for this program, we're looking between 100 and 200 acre feet per year at this well. So Site C, the Andre Avenue site, you know, that's a fairly deep portion of the basin. And it seems likely that we'll be able to produce more than 100 acre foot per year at that site. And then Site D, Sunny Oaks, even though it may not be quite as deep on aquifer, water levels are very high there historically. And so production is expected to be very good at Sunny Oaks, perhaps as much as 190 acre foot per year. So these are just our best estimates of annual production based on the model of the basin and the basin as we understand it. And we say to everybody, the only way to be sure is to drill a hole and see what's there, at least a test hole. So in constructing a new water well, it can be very expensive to extend utilities to that well. Pipelines are very costly. And so we look at proximity to existing community infrastructure as being an important consideration. So in Los Osos Middle School, we'd have to run down Pismo and cross South Bay Boulevard about 1,100 feet. I'd say that's neutral. That's a not a significant investment in infrastructure, 1,000 feet. Sage is a longer pipeline and probably a disadvantage. It's almost a half mile away from our distribution system. Andre is close to an existing pipeline. I'd call that a relative advantage. And Sunny Oaks, neutral, about 1,200 feet away. Plus, they just resurfaced their roads out there, and so we'd probably have to use trenchless technology to avoid cutting any roads. Now, this one, I'm going to try to avoid... Right. Yeah, avoid controversy, right. So, neighborhood community acceptance. I've done a couple of well projects in the community over the years, and to date, they've been pretty non-controversial. And our A Street well, our South Bay Boulevard well have been non-controversial. And so Los Osos is no stranger to controversy, obviously. But this is probably the biggest input we've ever had by far on the construction of a well. And a number have been built over the years. So I'm not going to presume to have my finger on the pulse of what's going to be controversial and what's not. So I almost deleted this slide. So I could be totally wrong, but Los Osos Middle School, from what I've heard so far, I expect it to be non-controversial. It's not really in proximity to neighboring wells. There's the schools next to it. And in general, folks have been saying, why don't you just put it there? So I may be wrong on that, but that's how we're currently viewing it. Sage and Andre, I'd say either potential or significant controversy on those wells. We've had a lot of neighbor input that they're concerned not just about production in their area, although that's the primary concern, but the look of the well and the just community factors associated with the well. So we expect those to be highly controversial. And I think the turnout tonight perhaps is evidence to that. I'm sure you just didn't want to hear me talk about water. Site D, Sunny Oaks, not sure. We invited everybody from Sunny Oaks. Maybe if you're from there, you can express an opinion tonight or do that after the meeting. But perhaps less controversial because they're all on community water there, but not certain on that. Seller status and land cost, I would say all of these are very preliminary in nature. Los Osos Middle School, we do expect it to be publicly owned land, either school or county. So we call that an advantage, probably be a willing participant in the well. Sage is unknown, premature to comment on that. Andre, we called it an advantage. We have a willing seller at this point. Sunny Oaks, unknown and premature. So aesthetic concerns, and I'm going to talk about well interference at the end too, so if you think I'm glossing over that, I'm going to hit it straight on later. But start with this aesthetic concerns, and I would call that things like noise. You know, what am I going to hear? What is it going to look like? Is it going to be compatible with the neighborhood? So in each of these cases, and you know, you could certainly go and visit some of our other wells. We have one at the library across the street. You know, submerged, submersible pumps that are not on electronic variable frequency drives tend to be very quiet, particularly if they're in an enclosure. Many of you have submersible pumps on your properties. And so if it's soundproofed and inside, we'd expect in any of these cases for the well to be quiet. And so in the case of Sage Avenue, it's a large residential parcel. You know, quite a bit of setback from other uses. perhaps a little less controversial for aesthetic concerns like noise and visual because of what's around it. Andre, it's on a one-acre lot that's developed. It's in a community that has smaller residential parcels. We expect this particular criteria to be of significant concern, even though it's in a submerged situation and soundproof. We don't expect it to be a noise problem. And then Sunny Oaks, again, some mitigation would be required. It's next to a residential community there as part of the mobile home park. So just so you can see what a well site looks like when it's not in a building, you can see the basically the hole in the ground protrudes above ground with a concrete pedestal, and the pump is dropped down into that hole and is submerged deep down in the water. And then there's some piping that's above ground to manage the water that comes out of the well. So there's really not a lot to it other than a lot of other engineering infrastructure. Wells tend to be very simple above ground. A lot of folks have expressed concern that the look of the property would be similar to properties that we use as sort of a multi-purpose yard, and this is our South Bay yard. This yard has a lot going on. It has a treatment system. It has two wells. It has a county sewer lift station pump, and it's used for some storage, and this is a picture of that. So folks are concerned that this is how the well is going to look, and we don't need this site for anything like this. It would be only a well site, and if there is treatment required, it would be housed in the same building as the well. And this is, it kind of washed it out a little bit, but you can go across the street and look. It's the green building, boxy building. The architecture would obviously be better than this. This is maybe the 1970s architecture. Nothing wrong with that, but so this is next to the library building. You can see it's enclosed. You can walk up to it, and there's no exposed elements to this particular well. Very quiet, too. Okay, so probably 9 times out of 10 when I've talked to people about a new municipal well, this is the issue that is of primary concern. Is it going to impact my well? And, you know, only through physical field testing can we give you absolute certainty. And there has been some field testing that definitely increases our level of confidence. But we did retain the groundwater hydrologists to look at all the data we have, to pull as many well logs as were available from the publicly available sources, to plot those, figure out what zones they were tapping, run a computer model, and figure out, based on the physical testing that's been done and the computer model, what the expected impacts might be. And with the resources spent to date, that's the, you know, the best we can do. I do want to emphasize, and I know several of our decision makers will say this if I don't say it, that in environmental review, we have to identify impacts, and not just impacts, potential impacts that may come up after this well is drilled. And the way it's been, I think, communicated to the public, and I'll reiterate it here, is we can't just drill a well and prevent people from being able to pump water from the aquifer for their own purposes. There would have to be mitigation. That mitigation might be anything from drill a deeper well at no cost to the owner, or extend well service from this well or another well. Those impacts would have to be mitigated. So when we look at the different sites, and I'm going to give you some technical information here in a second, Los Osos Middle School, we saw it as a relative advantage because of lack of nearby neighbors. In general, the closer you are to these wells, the more the potential impact. And that Los Osos Middle School was fairly far from those other uses. Sage and Andre, I'd say both, even though the impacts are expected to be small, mitigation may very well be required, and it certainly would be in any environmental document on both of those cases. And then in Sunny Oaks, we saw this as a relative advantage because there's not residential uses nearby, and water levels are very high there. So this is a recent effort that our groundwater expert went through to try to understand, to the extent that they could, via publicly available sources, what the distribution of well types were around our sites. And this is focused on Site C, because that's been a lot of the discussion over the last few meetings. Excuse me. Talked for several hours today during the Basin Management Committee meeting. I'll make it to the end. So these are, again, well logs that come from publicly available sources. If you think you have a well log, which is a well completion report, and you say, well, I want that on this map, I'm not sure if you have it, we'll take any, you know, we'll certainly take that information and put it on the map if you're not sure that it's there. But this is what they were able to get through the public process. So there in X marks the spot, the yellow is one of the potential well sites, well site C, with the crosshairs on it. And then you'd have different colors for the depth and type of well, and all of these are private domestic well. We found one in the green there in the lower left, one perched water well, very shallow. There were a number of, on the blue, upper aquifer wells, we call it Zone C, and those are tapped in that shallower upper aquifer zone. And then there were a number of deeper wells, which I think some of you have told me this in testimony, saying, hey, it's not just shallow wells out here, we've got some deeper wells. And those that we're aware of were plotted in the purple there. And those are all mixed aquifer wells. They aren't just tapped in the deep zone. They're tapped in both shallow and deep. So if you are curious about what water levels have done over time, forgive the, it's kind of a busy slide, but water levels currently are shown on the right-hand side there, and a history of some of the wells where we have a long track record are plotted. We had a pretty severe drought in the mid-70s, early 80s, where water levels were low, a peak in the wet season in the mid-90s, and then in the recent drought, water levels were low and recovered a little bit with the rainfall over the last few years. And I know this doesn't necessarily reflect your story. I'm not implying that your well isn't different than this. This is a snapshot at a couple of wells where we happen to have a long history. I'm not drawing conclusions from this. So potential interference with surrounding wells on Site C. And this really go to Site B as well. If you're here for Sage Avenue, it's very similar. We actually did some field testing at Sage Avenue. We had a deep well. We pumped it. We tested it. We measured it. We measured shallow wells around it. So this is not just a guess. It is based on some data that you never can know until you actually drill, pump, and see. But we're expecting if this well produces at the very max 200 acre feet per year, and that's running daily, you know, 16 hours a day. If it produces at the max, we're expecting in the shallow wells no more than 4 to 6 foot water level impact. Now, you might say, well, that doesn't sound like a lot, and for most of you, it's not. Now, if you are already on the edge and you don't have enough standing water above your pump, we did identify some of those, you could possibly be impacted, and that impact would have to be mitigated. And so we're not, you know, closing our eyes to that, but even with these small drawdown levels, again, there may be some impacts if your well was just barely in that zone C. And certainly if we, whatever site we pursue, there's going to be additional field testing, and we'll get very specific with what the mitigations look like if it's ultimately pursued. I probably should have blown this up, and we're going to make this study available on the web if you don't already have it. It's just as hot off the press. It's draft, but we're going to post it to the web, and it provides some charts that say, well, depending on your distance from the well, here's how much water level impact you might see. And again, it's if you're right next to the well, it could be up to 5-6 feet, and as you go away from the well, it tapers down to a smaller level. And this is based on what we saw in a physical test on Sage Avenue. The farther you are from the well, the less the impact. If you're in a mixed aquifer well, the impact's a little bit more, though you already have a lot of standing water column on your well, and that was in the 6 to 8 foot range. So still fairly small impact in the mixed aquifer wells. So Here in Los Osos, you may know that we have a number of endangered species, particularly a shoulder-banded dune snail that is really provided a habitat challenge throughout the community. A lot of the vacant lots out here have it, and even a lot of the developed lots. For those of us who live in the Seward area, we sometimes had to be cautious even when we put in our sewer laterals because of the snail. So in all of these sites, if it's an undeveloped piece of ground, it's going to require mitigation of the snail issues, and that can be a time-consuming process. It could take a long time. It's doable, so I don't want to say that it's not doable, but it's a relative disadvantage if it's an undeveloped site. So when we look at these four sites, Los Osos Middle School, existing playfield, existing parking area, it's an advantage. It's developed. We're not going to have a snail issue at that site. Sage Avenue, significant disadvantage. It's an undeveloped portion of the site. Andre, the particular site we were looking at, it'd be an advantage because there's an existing structure at that location. And then in Sunny Oaks, it's vacant at the back of their mobile home park, and we'd see that as a disadvantage because there's a potential habitat there. Probably is habitat. This is kind of a minor issue that matters a lot to the engineers and the operators, but site layout and access, how easy is it to get service vehicles into the site, how easy it is to access it for operations and maintenance. We thought that would certainly be an advantage at the middle school and possibly at Sage because it's a large property. Disadvantage at Andre, it could be done, but it's tight. And then perhaps an advantage or neutral at Sunny Oaks. A lot of people ask, what is involved in the operation of a well? I mean, are you there every day? Are you there all the full time, once a week? So, you know, if you were a private water system serving a school or something like that, often the operators only visit once a week. For a municipal well like this, it's as much as one brief visit daily. Just make sure the well's pumping, make sure the system's working. They usually like just to get their eyes on the well once a day. So there is going to be some operator effort to visit the well from time to time. Oh, I just crashed out of my PowerPoint here. Hold on. Maybe I thought I was done. All right. Well, you can all see that. But so environmental and coastal development permit timing. I think I described this before, that the next steps are environmental review, probably with carrying multiple alternatives forward in that review. And then you need a coastal development permit. And for those of you who haven't been through that process, it starts at the county level and goes to local planning commission at the county. If the neighbors say, don't like that project, we're appealing it, appeal to the Board of Supervisors. Still don't like it, appealed it again, appeal to the California Coastal Commission. So that whole process can take a long time. And it could be that any site up here has enough controversy to go all the way to the Coastal Commission. We don't know. In the past, the wells that I've drilled in the community have been at the Planning Commission level without a lot of controversy. So site A, we saw that as probably an advantage, maybe less controversial, don't know for sure. And then again, sites B and C, disadvantage, and then probably Sunny Oaks as well because of the undeveloped habitat, but hard to say. So our next steps are, of course, to gather feedback tonight, and especially interested in, you know, if you think one of these sites would be uncontroversial, or if you think, you know what, all these sites are controversial, that would be helpful feedback. If you think, boy, you didn't even talk about, you know, insert the criteria that I haven't even thought about, that would be very helpful. If there's neighborhood groups that, you know, folks who have time to stay connected with this issue and want to follow it along. I don't want to bring up any names, but I know some of you are really good at organizing, and you've already been in touch with me, shared a lot of data back and forth, find that very helpful beginning this process before we get halfway through it and realize we missed something significant. So if there are people who have kind of are leading groups or keeping groups informed, always happy to meet with small groups if that would be of an advantage. You know, the Los Osos Basin Plan is took years to put together. It's not a perfect document. We're constantly evaluating whether we need to change course. We recently heard a study today with the Basin Management Committee that said, you know, the Basin Plan says we need to drill three of these wells. We've completed one. It's on Los Olivos Avenue. We thought we'd have to do two more. And with the latest study, because water demands have dropped throughout the community significantly, we're actually seeing some positive signs that seawater intrusion is abating a little bit. It's too early to call that game, and that could be an up and down fight with seawater intrusion. But we've had several years of promising results, and currently the recommendation is only to drill one more of these wells to balance the basin with existing development. In fact, that was to be cautious and careful. The study actually said, and it'll be posted online, that we're approximately balanced under our current well configuration, but there's risk that if we don't get our average rainfall, 17 inches per year, consistently, if we our model's is off, there's not enough buffer there. So the recommendation is to go forward and complete one of these wells, perhaps at one of these sites, perhaps at another site we're going to hear about tonight. So I wanted you to hear the full scope of it. A lot of years of history, and seawater intrusion is a threat to all parts of the basin, and something that the district is committed to reversing, to correcting, because it was caused by overpumping in the first place. And so I think now, okay, good, that's what we want to do.
No, I was just had a couple of comments. I was wondering if you were going to give some additional background information on why we need the new well, and I think you just covered that. But yeah, it's because of the overpumping for years, and the seawater intrusion is the reason. And just one clarification, and I've seen this presentation multiple times. So, under the California Environmental Quality Act, multiple sites alternatives do have to be evaluated. So we can't just evaluate one site. Under the law, we have to evaluate multiple sites. So multiple sites will be identified for the purpose of the environmental evaluation. And they're not all preferred sites, but we do have to identify multiple sites. I'm speaking as the attorney now, so
right,
sorry to step on your toes. But
and Mr. Hilsky, I had one other item I forgot to cover that I wanted to cover. So there's, of course, if you're talking to your neighbors, there might be some facts and some things that need to be clarified. One of the questions I've gotten, and I wanted to address it tonight, is that in the case of Site C, the Andre site, we don't have an agreement with that seller, even though it's a willing seller. There was contemplation that there could be a reservation of capacity, 10% of the capacity of that well under that agreement, and that's drawn some feedback from neighbors. That's not in any agreement or document. It was a concept and still is. But in any one of these well sites, there may be negotiations with the owner of the underlying property where they may ask for some type of a consideration other than dollars. So no agreements are in place. The district can't enter into an agreement without environmental review first occurring, but I did want to be up front with that, and I'm sure we might hear about that tonight as well. And I think we're ready to...
So with that, again, we're going to try to keep this as informal as possible, but since it is being televised, I do need you to step up to the podium and speak into the microphone. So there will not be a three-minute limit, but try to keep it reasonable time period, so Rob will be available to answer any questions. So we're at it.
My name is Tom Dixon. I live in the Andre area on Los Osos Valley Road, very near to Palomino. We just recently had to put in a new well. Our shallow well, was 110 feet deep and was failing. We put in one that's now 160 feet deep. We submitted a well report, and the county has been monitoring our well. I'm curious as to why our new well and our old well and all of the surrounding wells aren't showing up on your charts. We're well within that that area, and it just mystifies me that those aren't. I was able to get well reports for a number of surrounding properties.
We do. The way you get well logs, if you're just a engineer, you draw the boundary, identify all the potential properties to the county and the state, and say, give me all the logs you have on file. That system is very imperfect and frustrating. I've had wells that, you know, PVC casings, can't find a log for. It's drilled in the last 20 years. So it's not uncommon. I hope someday we can use a computer system to do that much more efficiently than is done. But if you're interested in having it in that memo, it's draft. If you want to provide it, we'll include it. And that goes to anybody who wants to have it up there. Absolutely.
Okay. I'm just concerned that if the wells, in spite of all of the reports that you have, if wells do begin to fail in the area, that we are somehow covered for that at not at our expense, but I'm just a concern about, and I'm sure a lot of the other neighbors feel
that's
the same way.
Primary concern.
And Lee, I'll talk. But under water law, which is California, probably the most complicated area of law. I think Roy would agree with me on that one. We can't not address that concern, okay? So you have to be provided water. So I don't know if you want to piggyback on that.
Just very shortly, even at your worst-case scenario, we would be required to provide a physical redemption so that if our groundwater well impacted your groundwater well such that you couldn't make reasonable use of it, we would have to provide you the same reasonable amount of water out of our system. That's been the law for 100 years. They did make some drastic changes on groundwater law recently, but they haven't changed that aspect of it yet.
Okay. That's all I had.
Thank you,
Thank
Tom.
You. My name's Ed Van Fleet. I live on Napomo Street. I've got a little different take on this. The Program C expansion well project is just going to take water from the east side, move it to the west side, to the detriment of the east side. This is just treating the symptom and not the cause. We don't need more wells, in my opinion. We need more water. Therefore, I recommend that the CSD shift its focus from the Program C project to the creek side, to the creek discharge and storm perch water recovery projects. That'll solve our problem. Also, on the disadvantages on the Andre site, it's in the neighborhood. You've already addressed this a little bit, but it's in a residential neighborhood. Four wells in that area have already gone dry. And nobody's real happy about the CSD giving 10% of that water away when we've got a lot of people waiting since about 1988 to build on their lots in the numbered streets. So I really wish you would reconsider this well expansion project and focus more on capturing our runoff water. Thanks.
You have to clap for me, too, if you're not.
You could say that? No.
Good evening. My name is Steve Best. I'm really wondering what really is the practical purpose of putting in another well. It seems like a proverbial drop in the bucket for what we're really talking about here. We're talking about drawing water from the lower aquifer that is going to generate a more negative pressure in that zone on the west, on the east side, opposite of the saltwater intrusion in the lower aquifer on the west side, which would appear that it would draw the saltwater intrusion closer to it. I'm not really sure what the answer would be on that, but whether or not we're creating a exacerbating the problem of drawing that saltwater intrusion area more in, closer into town. I also wonder about what is the situation with the Golden State. Are they going to be also drilling wells in the area? What is their status? Do they have a need to be doing more wells? And if that the need for the CSD to be drilling more wells, if Golden State is not needing a new well, if that need could be shared, what's the overall balance that's going on here, and how can we be looking at the our current need, which is we have a abundance of reclaimed water that we're producing, but that is not potable water. We need to start looking at production of potable water to be able to recharge our aquifer with potable water so that we can then create a positive pressure back on the saltwater intrusion zone and protect our aquifer from being pressurized and endangered by the saltwater intrusion. And that's where we really should be looking at. To be drilling another well that is going to be serving a relatively small need and not looking at the bigger picture of how we protect our aquifer, protect our natural resource, is something that is very short-sighted.
And I think, Steve, and hey, we get to do a dialogue, but, you know, 5 years ago when the basin plan was first being discussed, we had a lot of people who were concerned about, hey, is it really going to solve the problem if we drill new wells? It just felt counterintuitive. So we had our groundwater experts work, you know, peer-reviewed by outside folks, and even that wasn't enough to really satisfy people, right? So, but we have noticed that as we've brought on some new assets in the right location and have backed off of some of our very poorly sited wells that are right in the middle of the deepest part of the, you know, submarine canyon right on the coast, that we've seen chlorides retreat and we've seen water levels recover in the right areas. And so I know some people I'm not going to be able to convince and wouldn't try. Everyone's fully entitled to really come to their own conclusions. But, you know, we've had a number of the experts who have recommended this. The way this basin works is that pumping needed to shift up into the upper aquifer and east in order to force seawater intrusion out. And the 2 years ago, I said the jury is really out until we see physical changes. We appear to be seeing some of those changes. It's too early to say it's definitive. And we publish those results twice a year to the public. But I think concepts that focus also on recharge, smart use of recycled water, stormwater recovery, that those are also part of the puzzle, just like conservation was probably the major part of the puzzle at the end of the day. Folks dropped their water use in the urban area, and it's really done good things for the basin. So I think of whatever study that moves forward, we have to, the best we can, answer that question. Why do, you know, is this well really needed? So appreciate that.
Hi, my name is Larry Bender. I think putting well in the residential areas is not a good idea. Drilling a well is a very risky proposition, no matter where you drill it. And if you can avoid some of those risks by putting it as far away from residential customers, not customers, but other residential wells, would be a better idea. At the basin management meeting that it was to earlier this afternoon, I heard of one of the deep wells where the casing's leaking and nitrates are coming from the upper aquifer and going into the lower aquifer. That's one of the things. I know when they put the well in next to the sheriff's station, they had contamination in the water, and it took forever for them to finally correct that situation. So again, putting in any of these wells is going to be risky at any of the sites, but at least by putting it further away from the residential area, like the middle school or at the trailer place, it reduces that risk a little bit. And I think that would be a better idea. If there was another location further up the valley, you know, I know it's, you're worried about the initial investment running the pipe, you know, from wherever the well is. But once you put a well in, it's a long-term investment. You know, and if it's an extra $10,000 or $20,000 to put it a mile up the road, well, that, you know, over 30, 50 years, that's not much. It's not a lot of money. So anyway, that's just my two thoughts on the wells here.
Thank you very much.
Anybody else want to talk?
I hope I'm not cutting in line. I'm John Goodrich, and I live on Torrey Road. I started my experience with this by reading your 320-page report. I think
you,
I'm on.
You version. Get a prize for sure if you got through that whole document.
I think I'm version. I'm on version 5.
How many sittings did it take you to do?
But there are several parts to this that are important to me. First, the plan generally started off, as I understand it, that the seawater intrusion was threatening the wells on the western side. And a great deal of the plan was focused on moving wells farther east to get away from seawater intrusion. I think a lot of the engineering we see in the recent report, and a lot of what I've heard, is that, well, if we just site the wells correctly, we'll make new water. And I don't think we will. I think that the basin plan, if you read the earlier versions of it, dismissed the possibility of increasing the available water out of hand. I think the first version I read had one short paragraph that said it's impractical to try to sequester any more stormwater runoff. I think that that is a monumental mistake. The reality, as you started off tonight's discussion, was seawater intrusion is pushing this problem. We're talking about adding 5,000 new residences in the environment. So when we talk about saving water by decreasing consumption, we have to balance that against the fact we're talking about expanding the number of users. So the threat of using water that we don't have and thus enhancing seawater intrusion is a real threat for all of us. When I bought the ranch, the first year, I got a call. I was not living here then, from one of the people in the ranch saying, oh, the fences are 4 feet underwater. That didn't sound like any ranch I'd ever had before. But the 4 feet underwater was because my ranch and my two neighbors' ranches back up to Warden Lake. I didn't even know what Warden Lake was at the time. When it rains heavily here, later in the season when the groundwater is pretty much everywhere, Warden Lake backs up. At one time, Warden Lake was a permanent body of water. I think with the cost of a small berm that I could pay out of my pocket, we could sequester water from the upper part of the valley, the upper part of the watershed. My crude calculation says that the watershed is about 3,100 acres. And if you take your 17 inches a year of rain, which I've never gotten, I may have a leaky rain gauge, but if you take your 17 inches of rain, that's 42,000 acre-feet of water a year. Not much of that stays on my ranch or any of the adjacent ranches. It flows to the ocean. It flows to the ocean on a course which goes by our aquifer, capturing that water, capturing even 10% of it, would radically change the problem we're facing, would provide us plenty of water, provide everybody plenty of water, to stop worrying about water rationing as a practical matter. I don't know if that can be done. But before we fight over whose water is going to be lost, I'd rather see us study how we can get more water. And let me just say, I spent my life as a lawyer, and when somebody says, we're going to mitigate the problem if you suffer from something, that's an invitation frequently to a losing fight. And just like the snails when they get mitigated, the guys who own wells may not be happy with the mitigation because it doesn't mean life will be wonderful. It just means that there will be a struggle over how you get balance from something you've lost. Anyway, thanks for listening.
Yeah, no, thank you, John. Appreciate it. Sounds like it's an offer for a tour of Warden Lake to me. So, accepted. Thank you. Others.
Hello, everybody. My name's Lee. I live in Cayucas, and I help communities all over the Central Coast track their water levels together using some technology that I helped develop back in Milwaukee. Before I moved out here, I was helping people all over Wisconsin do the same thing. And it sounds like you guys really need this type of technology. Essentially, it's a water level sensor that screws into the top of your well and reports water levels to your own website continuously all the time. This is a way you can work together and understand what areas are at risk, what areas have a lot of water. And at the end of the day, you guys all just care about your water supply and you want to make sure it's healthy. And it's hard to do that if you're not monitoring it. So this is me offering to your community help in monitoring your water supply. That's all I got. So if you guys have
any questions. Good job. Very good.
My name's Bob Orton, and I can't offer you that. Is the board aware of the CCNRs for Enry Avenue?
I have heard about those CCNRs. One of your he probably doesn't want me to bring up his right name, here. But always happy to look at those. Yeah.
Okay. Do they have any relevance to a well being drilled on Enry Avenue?
I would like to look at them and like a very smart individual down the way there to help me look at those. To be able to really answer that question.
I would like to read just two parts of it, and then it's yours.
These cover what area?
I can just give a brief little answer, so you can have a little context for reading it instead of waiting for my response afterwards. I think if we looked at that, you would put that into a disadvantage category because the process of making the CSD not have to comply with the CCNRs would have some pain to it, but the CSD could get there.
Okay, so you heard it here first. All right.
Just two parts of it that I've underlined here. One of them says that no lot shall be used except for residential and small farm purposes. The second one, which is, you can say is germane to the subject here, is that under under a nuisance, it says no noxious or offensive activity shall be carried on upon any lot, nor shall anything be done therein which may or may become an annoyance or a nuisance to the neighborhood. I think there's probably a lot of people here that would raise their hand and say
that may be true, sir. Thank you. Appreciate that very much.
Secondly, could you bring that slide back up that showed the cross section of the aquifers?
You got it. You want the one that? I'll try.
Way back at the beginning.
That one,
right?
That one,
or the other,
or the one that shows the wells on it too. There's this one.
Yeah, I want that one there.
Okay.
That one there. Okay, in Site C, which is the one that we're thinking about, it's showing that the distance between the C and the D is approximately at 50 feet. So it's going, the upper aquifer is only 50 feet deep before Zone C comes into effect, which is lower aquifer.
It doesn't really clearly plot the top of Zone C in that chart. We have some well logs in there.
No, I'm talking about the bottom of Zone C.
Oh, the bottom of Zone C. That would be 50 feet below absolute sea level, or the ground surface is about 150 feet at that cross section.
Okay.
So 200 foot total.
Okay. That answers my question there. Thirdly, if you could explain the relationship between the CSD and the other water purveyor that's going to pay to have this well put in. What is the relationship?
Oh, Golden State, sure.
Golden State. What's the relationship as far as money is concerned?
So at this point, both the CSD, we have four participants in the Basin Management Committee, CSD, Golden State Water Company, and then both of them share about 38% of the financial burden for the Basin Management Committee. County is 20%, and Little S&T Mutual Water Company is a very good and helpful participant, is about 5 or 6%. So the relationship is through the court produced this Basin Management Committee, and that's where they're supposed to interact and relate. For this project, because Golden State already finished the first program C well, they did it at their expense, they equipped it, they're using it. So the CSD is on the hook for the next expansion well. So we would not expect Golden State to contribute financially to this particular well, would be the best answer I can give.
Okay, so how do you divvy up the money as far as charges every month for this water that's taken out of this well?
So it would go to, well, it depends on what site we're at. Right. Some of these sites we could run a direct pipeline all the way to the CSD system, like Sage and Los Osos Middle School. Some of them, it might be cost prohibitive to do that, and we might have to, and this would happen a little later on, there's an intertie between those two entities. It's bidirectional. We can send water to them and they to us. And so we can move water around the basin if, let's say, Golden State needed supply in a certain area where only the district had wells, we could move water to them. So we can push water back and forth in our distribution systems if that makes sense to both parties. Not obligating them to do that. It's just in the past we've been willing to work together on that type of a thing.
Okay. My last question involves the drawdown, depending on the distance from the well in question. And you said that you used another well in the lower aquifer and a couple adjoining shallow water wells for that. How far were those wells from the deep water well?
150 maybe?
Okay.
200? I mean, they're pretty close.
Okay.
Yeah.
But like you said, that was a 36-hour test.
It was a fairly short-duration test.
Right.
Yeah.
So we don't know what's going to happen 5 years down the line.
Yeah. You know, and the groundwater experts are very quick to say, hey, this is a very representative test for all these technical reasons. But whatever well we put in, long-term mitigations are going to have to be a part of that because, like you said, yeah, we think the science is good, but do you really know what's going to happen over the long term? So,
okay.
Yeah, I understand.
Last quick question. Somewhere in the draft it talks about mitigation, and you talk about desanding a well or possibly lowering a well pump or something like that if there was enough drawdown to the adjacent lower aquifer well that it would need that pump lowered. But it also mentions that mitigation would occur if a well totally failed at that time. Can you give us an idea if we had a totally failing well, what you would do for us?
I think the contemplation would be you need to have access to the same quantity of water, reasonable quantity, and whether that's extending a water main or drilling a new well, whatever it is, same quantity of water would need to be made available.
So in other words, if the water line from the commercial purveyors was already in the road.
Or it has to be extended. I mean.
I think what I'm trying to say is the cost of hooking up to and using municipal water is very expensive compared to running a well.
I get you, and Roy can correct me, but I would think if you're pumping water at a certain cost per acre foot, and you know everyone's in the $200 an acre foot range, I don't think the expectation would be, you know, we're going to connect you to our system and charge you full water rates. I mean, those are details that would need to be worked out, but I think, sure, that would be a concern if right now you only have the cost of electricity and maintenance on the pump. You don't want to pay full municipal water rates at $10 a unit. Roy
can weigh in on that.
The state water line, the water board wouldn't let us get away with that if we wanted to.
Right.
They require what's called a physical solution, and that what that means is whatever the particular facts and circumstances require, so that the damaged basin user, for lack of a better word in this case, is put in the same position they were before.
Okay.
And that includes their pocket.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Other questions and comments? Or if this is just too public, feel free to forward those in writing as well. Or call me.
My name is Bob Whitworth, and I live on Andre Drive, real close where you're planning on or considering a well. And one of my main concerns is the dryness of California to start with. We have wildfires everywhere. And if these wells go down, or that water goes too deep, my one-acre lot is covered with pygmy oak trees. And they're not that healthy to begin with. So I'm extremely concerned about you taking this water and everything dries out. And once that happens, that's not going to get fixed. You can't place 60 or 70-year-old trees. If you actually estimated how much a tree like that would cost, it'd probably cost you around $150,000. And I probably got 60 or 70 of them on my own lot. So fire is a main concern. And for all the other reasons, it absolutely makes no sense that you want to put a well in that area and pump that much water out, and especially to talk about another 5,000 people. I mean, we've never even heard that until now. It's kind of like that was a hidden fact. So that's not something that exactly makes me feel like everything's up front.
Bob, I want to make sure I understood what your concern was on those oak trees. So you're concerned about the oak trees now are tapping some water zone.
Well, they have to be. Yeah. Sure. In our area, the ground is all sand.
Right, right.
And I don't know how deep that it goes.
Okay,
But this is a major concern.
I think that's a fair item to add to the list. Thank you for that.
Right.
I did want to let me let you finish first. I didn't mean to cut you off. Sorry.
Well, I'm just about finished with what I'm saying. It's just that it's the fact that we bought our houses and we had our wells, and then somebody comes along and creates a problem, and it'll even be hard to sell our property if this problem continues along, or you say that you're going to come up with some type of mitigation where you will give us city water or something like that. But that's not going to be an easy sell. Especially if whenever there's a clause in there that says that the owner moves, then that goes away for the other property person to buy this. So there's quite a few problems here that are still on the outside that I have not heard addressed.
Oh, thank you, Bob. I did want to talk about growth.
Anything, the mitigation measures run with the property, not with the individual. So I just wanted to make that clear. So.
Well, let's put it this way. We get 15 years down the road. I mean, how many of you are still going to be here?
No, it's a recorded document.
But there's plenty of recorded documents that if we can't get our hands on, it creates a problem. I mean, why on earth should we want to give up our water when we've got a home that we're happy with, we purchased it that way, And even our CCNRs speak to that to some degree. But I'm totally not in favor of this Andre well.
No, we get that.
Well, I'm glad you do.
I guess the one other comment that I wanted to make, and I don't know if Rob was going there, but this 5,000 additional users keeps coming up, but that's, I don't know where that's coming from.
Well, somebody...
It's coming from Mr. Gibson today.
No.
Yes. This afternoon after the meeting.
Can I take a swing at that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Bob.
See, so anyhow, there's some stuff, more stuff that you guys not even clued in on. So.
I appreciate the oak tree, the oak tree comment also. So future growth. So if you look at the basin plan, those of you who have read it, you'll notice that there's two different conditions that the basin plan speaks to. One is, how do we balance this basin under current development, the people who are already here? And that's, you know, step one, important step one. If you own a vacant piece of property anywhere in the urban area of the community, that comes along with this condition that the Coastal Commission put in that said, before anybody connects to the sewer project, a vacant lot, this community is going to have to prove to the Coastal Commission with substantial evidence that they've addressed the water supply issue before any growth happens in the sewer areas. And that's just, it's actually attached to the wastewater project. Special condition 5. Some of you have memorized it. Let's say that got addressed. Coastal Commission says you've provided substantial evidence. Okay, there can be growth at some level. The question is how much, if we completely built out this community, every vacant lot that can be developed was developed. That number I don't have in front of me, but I've seen estimates that are in the 2,000 dwelling unit. You might have been hearing population or persons, 5,000.
I'm not sure, but Bruce specified.
Okay, he's probably talking about persons, population, and that would happen over a very slow mandated growth rate. But at this point, this board, we're concerned about existing development, balancing the basin now. The Coastal Commission is going to be the one that ultimately has to make that call that, yeah, there's substantial evidence that this issue is solved. And some of you might have comments on that, too. You know the land use process better than me. This district board doesn't have any land use authority. That comes from the county. And there is, for those of you who are really interested in future growth potential, there'll be a public process for what they call the community plan. I think by the end of, probably by the first quarter of next year, I would think at this point, they'll be having hearings and discussions about that. I think it would be interesting to keep your eye on. So, anyways, that's what I know.
Well, and also to piggyback on that, any future growth, also any people that are applying for permits have to comply with Title 19, which means there has to be an offset in the water, so you can't use additional water. So if I'm, and I'll just use a bad example, but if I'm going to add another bathroom to my house, I have to offset that by somewhere else in the basin, and that's Title 19 that's under control. That's in effect. So,
can I ask a question from here? It's a little hard to get there. I have not heard anybody mention global warming and seawater level rise.
Okay, global warming and seawater level rise. I know Chuck was hoping to say something about growth, too.
Did you want to talk about that?
I just thought we should make it clear the program A, B, C, D. This is program C. It's meant for existing water use. Program A was too. Program B, when you start seeing program B projects, those are addressing future development.
Correct.
And I don't know where D fits in. But
D's way down the road.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, Chuck. And so climate change, global warming, sea level rise. There's been a number of documents that have been published looking at, you know, there's global climate models that predict a high variety of rainfall totals here in the community. Some of them are similar to what we have today. The worst one was half in 50 years. And so there's some documents that talk about that. And then sea level rise, you might think that increases seawater intrusion substantially. Because seawater is denser than freshwater, it actually, as that level rises, the freshwater influence also rises. So it does have an impact, but it's not as bad as loss of rainfall. Loss of rainfall in a basin like this is number one. So, you know, certainly we have a buffer in all our programs of, you know, to allow some climate variability. But in some distant point in the future, if we're only getting long-term half the rain we're getting today, we'll have other things that we're going to have to address. So I think that's a fair question.
Yeah, and there was some assumptions made in the basin management plan, but there was also flexibility included in that plan to allow for those variations.
Hi, Ed again. I just wanted to let my neighbors know that the next to the last item on the Basin Management Committee board meeting earlier today was update on status of creek discharge and storm perched water recovery projects. So I know you're already looking into this, and I really appreciate it, but I wish you'd give it more priority. And I have a question. Any idea how much water we could get off of that?
60 to 80 acre feet, round numbers.
Are you talking per year?
Uh-huh. Yeah, and more in a wet year.
Thank you.
Good evening, Lindy Owen from Los Osos here. Again, I wanted to say the basin management meeting was interesting in that that involves everyone. The county is the one who has control over the 500 private wells in the water basin. And so when we talk about having very little information about the wells, it's just disturbing at this point. That should have been one of the priorities. And if you don't know how much water use is coming out of them and they're not being monitored, and what I kind of got a feel for tonight was if you don't know how deep these wells are, we're hearing 150 foot deep or 125 foot well had to go deeper. This is getting us nowhere when you start talking about the amount of use coming out of private wells, having absolutely no knowledge how much is being used in each well, and having no knowledge about how deep they are and how their depth might be affected if you put a 250 or 300 foot well in right near them. If they're at 150 feet, they may be severely affected. If they're 250 feet, they may not be. I would urge that the basin management program get moving on getting all of the 500 wells looked at, kind of reviewed. I really support that at least the usage be monitored. Nobody can say how much water you can use from the well, your own private well, but to know how much is coming out is the only way that we're going to know how much water we have in our basin, how much we're losing on a day-to-day basis, and how much might be adding in. I appreciate that technology. I understand it's about $1,000 a well. I think it could be in the basin management plan to come up with a partial payment to property owners to get that installed. Then they have the security of knowing how much water's in their well on a daily basis without having to do checks, and it can be monitored.
And you're talking about a meter on the well to look at usage.
Well, the technology that the young man from Cayucas was
that one measures about water levels inside the well, just how deep below the casing the well is. But I think you're talking about water.
Oh, I'm talking about usage.
Meters, okay.
Because, again, if somebody's not using a well or if somebody's using well water and giving it to their neighbors or something, those are just things that help us understand. And there's an understanding of 10 to 15% reduction once people are monitored for usage. It's just an automatic. And then I kind of wanted to say we're all in this together. I'm paying, you know, $7,000 a year because I happen to have a toilet that goes into the prohibition zone. People outside the prohibition zone are not paying anything. So we've all got our personal concerns, but I think we need to work at balancing a basin together as a community. And I hope that we can find good places to put these wells. There's a brand new well that was just put on Los Osos Valley Road. I was speaking earlier about that well. And they were two property fronts away from being able to hook up to Golden State. The property owner that was this side the last person that could hook up to the Golden State Municipal Water was forced to. He could not put a well on his property. Again, you might look at extensions of Golden State to start moving into some of these empty lots, and rather than putting more wells in that, again, until we monitor them, we don't know how much water is coming out of these 500 sites. That's all. Thanks.
Lindy, a couple of comments, and I know in the coastal zone, I mean, the monitoring of the wells is not under the control of the Basin Management Committee. It's under the control of the county. We have no authority. We have no authority to do that, nor does the CSD. Under the county regulations or county ordinance now, new wells drilled in the coastal zone do have to be monitored and have meters. It's the older wells that don't. So that's really something that we have to deal with the county. And I know there's been a lot of pushback from the existing users of wells that they don't want to have to meter their wells because they're afraid in the future they might be charged for the water they're being consumed or consuming. So, but that's an issue that has to be dealt with at the county. It's outside our scope of power or authority.
And I understand that, but the county is a major player in this, right. So in our basin management. So for them to just say that they're not going to participate for me. And I know that the state of California is putting in new requirements in order to be able to balance.
Right.
You cannot guess. That guesswork does not work. We're talking about spending thousands of dollars to put more wells in and possibly not doing the right thing, but
we've talked about this. I just wanted to make it clear to
I know,
other
I know,
people here.
But I want the pressure to go on our Supervisor Gibson and the county to do the work they need to do to clean up the well information, and I hope that the people that have wells would consider, maybe not at their cost, but the basin management's cost, right, to get a quantity meter on it. That's all.
I just want to make sure for the people that weren't
I think that's good to...
That it's not the Basin Management Committee, it's the county that they have to deal with on this issue.
Right. But we sit at a table with the county, so I'm tired of watching them do nothing. Thanks.
Thanks, Lindy. Come on back. Lee.
Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment about demand and supply of water. It's useful to understand the demand, how much water is flowing through your pipe. That allows you to monitor how much you're using and possibly cut back. But what I think you all really want to know is how much water is in the ground, what the supply is. And the way to do that is measuring water levels and modeling. So I just wanted to draw that distinction. A lot of people that I speak with across the state are worried about putting flow meters, the amount of water coming into the house, the demand side of things, because they don't want someone telling them how much they can or can't use. And I think that's understandable. But if you just have a meter on your well measuring water levels, that tells you how much is available in the ground. And I suppose you could use that to limit pumping somewhere else if it's bringing your water down to a certain level. But the only way that would happen would be through either an irrigating well or some other high-capacity well. The well owners in this room are not at risk of that kind of management, I believe. But my comment is to draw the distinction between measuring the demand and the supply, because it is important.
No, very good point. Steve's got another comment, Steve?
Yes.
You can. Bring it.
You know, we're been splitting hairs talking about the development of the area, whether it's going to be on the Seward area or not. You know, it's one aquifer, and we're all using the same water. So it's whether you're in the Seward area or not, we're all in the same boat. We need to be looking seriously at the future, and we can't legislate how much it's going to rain. So we have to come up with a better plan of where we're going to get our water and how we're going to generate that. We have a facility out there, out by the cemetery, that is taking and collecting our wastewater. And right now it's producing treated water. That's a very loose word, because basically it's just taking the nitrates and taking the fecal material out of it. but it still has all the endocrine disruptors and the contaminants of an emerging concern. And we're putting that into our aquifer right now. And at what point are we going to lose control of a aquifer that's not going to be potable any longer? We need to be thinking about producing potable water. With that, we will be able to have better control over our aquifer. We'll be able to maintain a healthier aquifer, which we'll also be able to, by being able to irrigate with that potable water for our homes and for our buildings and so forth, that means less water being pumped out of the ground. It'll help keep our aquifer safe for a longer period of time. We can also start thinking about desalinating water. If we had a recreational facility that was taking water from the saltwater intrusion zone, using it for a pool, and then sending it to be desalinated at that same facility, then we would be generating a large quantity of water, half to a full acre foot a day of desalinated water that we can put into our aquifer to help keep to regenerate it and to keep it healthy for all, you know, for the life of that aquifer, to make sure that all the concerns that we have in terms of whether it's development or the needs of the community, whether it's the change of the environment, all the things that we need to be concerned about. Yes, we have to be very concerned about our environment. How is global warming changing the situation? We don't know if in 10 years or not, whether or not we're going to have any rain at all. And we need to start thinking about things like that. We need to think outside the box. Where and how are we going to generate that water to put back in? We're taking water out of that aquifer, and we're not taking the responsibility of how we're putting water back into that aquifer that is clean and healthy and going to maintain the life and integrity of that aquifer for the lifetime and for our children or for our grandchildren. And until we start thinking that way, we're just being stupid.
Appreciate it, sir. Other comments and thoughts? Yeah. Richard.
I can't believe I got more than 3 minutes and I'm not even going to use it.
It's a rarity, Richard. I'll put the timer in if it makes you more comfortable.
I think because it's being televised or recorded to be retelevised, and you have this size of a crowd in the room, I think this would be a good opportunity for Rob to talk about how severe the seawater intrusion issue was. And just maybe in 5 minutes, talk about the steps, you know, where we were headed, the steps that have taken place, and some of the improvements that have, you know, caused the slowdown. Because this well was put in Program C because of that issue, the continued increase in the number of feet that seawater intrusion was coming in inland annually from where it was 20, 25, 30 years ago. Maybe if you could just, this would be a good opportunity, especially with it being videoed.
Yeah, I think that's good. Even a decade ago, 5 years ago, seawater intrusion was advancing at the rate of several hundred feet per year. You could almost see it advance from test to test. And it was a threat level that I think spawned some significant action. But if the community hadn't worked together to reduce their water use, if some of these new systems hadn't been brought on, I think we'd be in a very scary situation right now, where the urban portion of the community is saying, you know, we're looking at emergency permits, looking at these processes where we don't have a time to go through these measured steps of getting the stakeholders together, figuring out the best thing to do, and then doing it. It was a very scary time, but that 200 foot per year marched got slowed and then stopped. And now, as the last few test results have been positive, we've made some steps, and water levels have recovered substantially. And there was a period of time where we weren't measuring it. We went, 4 or 5 years? You recall this? Where all the focus was on the wastewater project, and nobody was watching the farm on the basin. So now all the parties are committed and paying for twice a year, not only water levels but water quality, all these metrics, and so we have come a long way. But in the face of climate change and uncertain drought, we could have a long way to go. But Richard, I agree, it's a good time to talk about where we've been. It's glad we're not reporting another 200 feet per year of intrusion. Yeah. Other comments? This is a good.
Rob, I was just one thing that's come up today, and I just wanted to reiterate this was the Basin Management Committee today, as you know, as being our interim executive director, we are looking at the status of the creek discharge and the storm perched water recovery project. So I don't know if you want to talk a little bit more about the creek discharge. We did talk a little bit about the storm water and the perched water recovery, but I don't think you talked about the creek discharge. So you may want to talk a little bit more about that too.
Yeah, our basin, if you look at the little cross section there, the yellow part, which is Los Osos Creek, you can see that it's connected to the green, highlighted green zone D. So it has a unique geology, and this is primarily south of Los Osos Valley Road. And if you have a chance, when it first starts raining, that section of creek is so pervious that it'll handle, we've measured rates of up to 10 cubic feet per second, which is almost 5,000 gallons a minute, that will percolate into that reach of Los Osos Creek upstream of Los Osos Valley Road. And so the idea was that if we had supplemental water, recycled water, other sources, maybe it's storm water, recovered storm water, that during the dry times, if we could put it in the creek, that will recharge our aquifer, our lower aquifer. And so that was the genesis of the creek discharge project. Actually had been looked at decades ago with one of the iterations of the sewer project, but is now coming back as being something that we really want to talk about to recharge the basin. That being said, I know there's lots of discussion on the quality of that water that goes back in, which goes to Mr. Best's comments as well. Thank you.
I wanted to just give some last comments from my purely legal perspective here, and I apologize now for sounding a little bit like a lawyer. But
that's your job.
Yeah. The CSD and all the other participants in the Basin Management Committee are bound by new state law to manage the basin. Now, I don't get any credit for this because it was all previous district council and other people, but as a community, you were well ahead of the changes in state law by pursuing and participating in the litigation that led to the Basin Management Committee order from the judge. But that placed you a leg up and gave you great advantage in complying with now it's been mandated by the state to every groundwater basin in the state. So the committee, the Basin Management Committee and the district are both going to be mandated by state law to follow through on the basin management sections of that. Now, that state law isn't going to require that improvements be made that generate future growth, this other issue, but there will be requirements that the efforts to take to manage the saltwater intrusion and the nitrate take place. Now, that doesn't mean it has to be one of these wells. It doesn't even mean it has to be a well. So I would encourage everybody to remember always to mention these other alternatives, because when we get closer to a decision-making stage, the environmental documents are going to have to discuss not only the alternatives of well locations, but it's going to have a reasonable discussion of what other alternatives there are to manage the basin without drilling a well, if those are possible, and have adequate information so everybody understands what the decision-making process is. So please continue to bring all those types of things up. I'm sure Rob understands them. He knows them better than I do, but it's always good that we know that, because that'll make sure that the environmental documents are good enough so that we're all well informed.
Okay, so what I'd like to do, Rob, I'm going to put you on the spot here. You can, as far as getting in touch with the CSD, that's relatively easy. It's our website. The website. So you can get a hold of us that way. And I'll be the lead person in responding to any questions or comments. But, Rob, your contact information, how you want them to contact you?
Yes.
I told you I was going to put you on the spot.
For those of you who know me, I will respond to you. If all of you contact me, it will be a little bit of a challenge for me. But robm@wallacegroup.us is my email. I have a limited number of business cards. You're welcome to clean me out. And I will respond to you. If you just wanted to get a group of neighbors together and discuss this and let me hear you out, I'm happy to do that. Often I'll do that at no charge. I live in the community, care very much about this issue. And the residents of this community tend to be very reasonable, well-reasoned people, as evidenced tonight. So I feel comfortable doing that. So,
well,
yes,
Rob, also, I'm going to have, and I just talked to Ann, she'll post your link on our website, too, so they can get to you that way. So there will also be a link on our website. So I think I want to thank everybody for coming. We're still at the very, very beginning of this process, so we've got a lot to go here. I think the comments and input tonight were good, and then we'll have some more opportunities to have public comments before we get further into the process. But I want to thank everybody for coming.
Yeah, thank you.
With that, we'll be adjourned, right?